This is Hawk McIntyre, and you're listening to KHOI 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames.
Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Cynthia McClure, along with Ursula Rutenberg. Hello, Ursula.
Hello, Cynthia, and hello to you, the listener. We have a great show today. Loris Olson and Belinda Merritt, who is also a member of the Local Talk team, both of them will be helping us with some segments, as well as Cynthia and myself. Belinda will give us our end-of-the-year rundown on where you can hear live music, and Loris will be reporting on highlights from the 2015 asset funding hearing that was held in Ames last week. At these hearings, future funding is allocated to local human service organizations. And Cynthia, I understand that towards the end of the hour, Mary Wilkinson from the 4-H coordinator of Story County will be joining us in the studio together with her intern, Sarah Tweeten.
Absolutely. But right now, we are pleased to have Julie Kiefer and Allison Walters with us from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. Thank you for coming over to speak with us on Local Talk today. You just had your annual meeting where you recapped the 2014 and previewed this coming year. We wanted to bring some of that information to Local Talks to let our listeners understand what's going on.
So thank you for coming.
Thank you.
So first off, the Bureau described 2014 as a remarkable year. Can you explain what you meant by that?
Oh, absolutely. It really was. It was just the perfect storm of we had a large increase in individual travel, and then we also had a very strong year in group markets. And every market that we work in all had a really strong year. So it was just a nice combination all the way around.
So you evaluate a year in terms of how much activity there was and how many people came to Ames and...
Yes, the number of visitors that we bring to Ames, both for individual travel, for tours, visits, and in groups, whether it be conferences, sporting events, all the way around, we look at all those factors.
And just in case somebody listening doesn't know what the Convention Visitors Bureau is, your goal essentially is to bring visitors to Ames and to make sure that their stay here is a really good stay so that they go back to where they go and tell people that Ames is a good community as a destination. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, good. Just wanted to make sure that it was clear what the organization really, what your job is. So we're speaking specifically with Julie Kiefer and Allison Walters from the Bureau. And Julie is with Group Sales and Services, and Allison is with Member and Visitor Services. Is that correct?
Correct, yep.
Okay, so Allison, let's talk about Member and Visitor Services. Can you first explain what that really means, what that department really is?
Sure. We are a membership organization. You mentioned bringing people to town. Part of our funding is through the hotel motel tax. We have an agreement with the city that we receive a portion of the hotel motel tax. But we are also, part of that agreement is that we are a membership organization. So we have about 300 Ames area businesses that are members of our organization. And they're businesses that are interested in promoting their business to those visitors. So it's restaurants, shopping, entertainment, attractions, as well as the hotels. And so we work to promote those businesses to the visitors, and that's a great way to make that experience for the visitor a positive one when they come to town, that they see that there are things to do and places to go and to have a great experience.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about 2015.
Mm-hmm.
There are several areas that I saw outlined that you really work in. One of them is what's called individual visitors.
Uh-huh.
How do you actually have contact with individual visitors, or do you work mostly through your members?
Sure. We have our Sites magazine. That is our printed visitor's guide. And when people come to town, you know, they're looking for a resource, and that's a great resource. We print and distribute about 35,000 of those magazines, and they're distributed to participants when they're in town, maybe through a welcome bag or at an information booth or part of their registration or check-in Atlassian process. We also manage the Ames ISU information booth on University Boulevard, and we give out lots of information in the magazines there. The magazines are distributed at the hotels and through other community venues. And it's an opportunity to tell the story, you know, list the members and give them that exposure. They also have an opportunity to advertise in the magazine. It's supported by the advertising, and so it's a great way for our members to get their business in front of those visitors.
Last summer, KHOI did a conference, the Grassroots Radio Conference.
Yep. It was a great success, wasn't it?
It was great, yeah. And the Bureau provided bags.
Yep.
And in those bags was the visitor's guide, which people did use.
Yes, I think they do.
And they were delivered in very nice red bags, along with two or three hospitality people. Who were folks who we loved, who came and actually were part of our registration and helped welcome the people to the conference.
Right. Those are our Ames ambassadors. And we have about 30 longtime Ames residents. A lot of them are retired, but they're not necessarily retired. And they love to get out to the public and do things like helping with registration or working at an information booth, giving direction, and being that little extra touch of hospitality.
Yeah, they were great. We loved them.
Yeah.
So in this area of member and individual visitors, what do we see? What's going to be new? What's going to be great in 2015?
Sure. One thing is an addition to our website, and that's visitames.com. And when you're looking to come to a destination, that's one of the first things you go to is your website. And we're adding a new feature this year, and we're calling it Sites of Ames Videos. Sites, C-Y-T-E-S, is a play on Cy, the mascot. And these videos will be on our YouTube channel. We've started a Sites of Ames YouTube channel. And there'll be 30 to 45 second videos that our member organizations, our businesses, can put together about their business, put them on the website. And every member business has a listing on our website. That's one of the benefits of membership. So there'll be a link right there on their membership listing that will take you to their video. It'll be a great way for people to actually get an inside view of their business, of their restaurant. We have one from Vesuvius Pizza, and he actually shows you the process of making a wood-fired pizza.
Oh, that's nice.
So it'll be a great way for people as they're planning their visit or if they're in town to be able to just, you know, decide what they're looking to do today, get some input and inside look through that video.
So the videos are already up now?
We have some now online.
Okay, tell us again how you can go to the channel.
Through our website, visitames.com, there's a link that will take you to that. But there's also a YouTube channel, which is called Sites of Ames.
If you're on YouTube.
Yeah, C-Y-T-E-S, Sites of Ames, like the magazine. And you can see some of the videos. And we're adding more on a regular basis.
Okay, great. That sounds like a lot of fun.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. And again, the website is?
Visitames.com.
Well, Julie, let's talk for a minute. You're with Group Sales and Services, so explain what that department is.
Sure. So Group Sales and Services, we really focus on helping work with and identify groups that are a good fit for Ames. And so we actively go out to find individuals, find groups that would be a good fit for our community, for our facilities here, and really work with them to bring them to town. We also work with local contacts like yourself when we did with National Grassroots Radio.
That's how we met.
Yeah.
Wes,
right?
You helped us with the conference.
So we help people kind of figure out what's the right fit for them. You know, there's so many great options in Ames, so we really kind of look to put those pieces of the puzzle together and help look at what services they need, whether it be assistance with the registration. We have registration services, whether it be the services that Allison's already talked about or planning assistance, things like that. So we work with them on all those areas to just kind of help bring them to town and also work with local contacts, whether it be volunteer coordination, other information such as that.
Do a lot of people come to Ames for events and conferences?
Yes, quite a few do. And we actually, last year alone, we brought over 65,000 overnight stays in group sales to the community. So that's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people for a town like Ames.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about what we can see happening in 2015.
Oh, well, we've got a lot going on in 2015. A little bit more about how we look for groups. We look for them by individual areas, so we'll focus on sports and leisure activities. And so in that area, this next year, we'll have the Buick Club coming in doing their car show this next summer. We'll have USATF, which is USA Track and Field, hosting their regional competition as well as their state competition here. And we also work with a lot of youth events, and so we're very excited to bring back a lot of favorites. We will have, just next month, we will have Iowa High School Speeches large group competition next month. We'll be bringing back FFA again this year. Both of those events have just signed 5-year agreements to continue on in our community, so we're very excited about that.
What do you think it is that brings people Ames most to? Why do they choose this community?
I really do believe it's the people of this community that make it happen. You know, the Ames, it has such a great vibe to it. The people are warm. They're friendly. You know, we really talk a lot when we're working with groups about the Midwest hospitality that we provide here. Mm-hmm. And it's not just the services by our facilities, and it's also by the people in the community, the experiences they have in town. They feel comfortable and safe bringing them here. And it is a safe community. It's easy to get around in Ames. We have great facilities in the variety of spaces that we have available for groups to hold their events here. And our central location also helps a lot. It's very easily accessible to get to Ames, both within the state and within the country. And then also there's just that fact that it's also, we're a good value to have an event here as well. So,
you know, I would have thought that you were, the part you said about the people of Ames, that being maybe a little bit of diplomatic spin on your part. But I have to tell you that it's true, because mm-hmm. when we held a conference, when we asked people, they really, really liked Ames,
yeah.
too, for all the reasons that you're saying. And we didn't ask. They told us.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the number one thing that people said to us, was we liked Ames because we love the people here. So what you're saying, it's really true. It's not just marketing language.
Oh.
It's what everybody said to us, and we were amazed ourselves.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that I really love is Ames is really proud of its community. They really love hosting people here. They really welcome people in and are very interested in what they do. We're always amazed. We have a great volunteer base to help with events, and people seriously like to interact, and they're proud
yeah.
of their community.
Yeah,
so it is a great fit.
It's really true. You're listening to Local Talk, and we're here with Julie Kiefer and Allison Walters from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. And Loris Olson is also here with us. And Loris, you spoke yesterday with Bob Bosselman, who is president and of the board of the directors of the Convention and Visitors Bureau, and to get a recap. And Julie and Allison, if you would stay for a minute, we can talk a little bit afterwards. But listen, let's listen to what he had to say.
Dr. Bosselman and I focused on your new initiative of really looking at that individual visitor, the family visitor. And he also shared his perspective of Iowa. He's not an Iowa native. He came here, I believe, in 2007 to the university. And his specialty, in fact, he is, I believe, chair of the hospitality department at Iowa State. So I asked him, tell us about why Iowa. And he gave some fascinating comments. So let's go ahead and listen to the interview.
Okay, cool. Let's do that.
This is Loris Olson, and I'm with Dr. Bob Bosselman, professor and chair in apparel, events, and hospitality management at Iowa State University. He is the 2015 president of the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. You take over after a big year that includes citywide events producing a record number of group rooms and a record occupancy for the area hotels. Unfortunately, it was the disappointment of the voters rejecting the financing of the expansion and renovation of Sheman Building at the Iowa State Center. What are the goals that you're going to carry over from last year to this year?
Certainly our most important goal is to continue to try to draw as many people to the Ames community as we can. Our primary mission is, of course, to promote the meetings, events, the group business. That tends to get you your larger numbers quicker. So that obviously impacts the hotels and the restaurants and all the other businesses. The result of last spring's vote meant that we had already lost some large groups. We can no longer accommodate a lot of groups here in Ames. We simply don't have the space. And unfortunately, those groups would love to be here. They love Ames, and they love the services that Ames has, and they love the people of Ames. We just can't provide what they need in terms of running their meetings and events the way they would like. So they're going to Des Moines or they're heading over to Cedar Rapids or wherever they're going. Obviously, we would love to get them back. We think we will get them back eventually, but we immediately introduced a new strategy, a new strategic approach, if you will, recognizing that, well, okay, we're not going to get the groups immediately. So the focus became, how can we make Ames the destination of choice for individuals? And, you know, if you think about it overall, if you look at the entire United States, the transient or individual market for hotels is the largest market for business. Now, granted, we're not a New York City. We're not a Vegas or whatever. But there's a lot of really good things that are happening here in Ames. And that's what the ACV is all about, promoting Ames and making Ames the destination that people want to come to. We call it the smart choice. I think people can use whatever terms they would like to use. We want people simply to come to Ames and see what Ames is all about.
In addition to your interests of hospitality and tourism education, food safety, and policy analysis, you have been former editor of three different journals, including one you were a founding editor. You currently serve on the editorial board of a leading hospitality journal. In 2005 to 2006, you were president of the International Council on Hotel, Restaurant, and Institutional Education, and you won the highest honor in hospitality and tourism education from the International Council on Hotel, Restaurant, and International Education in 2008. Where do we fit in to all that type of travel that you have expertise on?
You know, I came here in July of 07, and I was living in Florida at the time, and I was at Florida State, Tallahassee. And I've been at four schools, and all are different environments, if you will. And each had its own uniqueness. And I think that's what makes – certainly what makes this country great is all of the individuality, all of the uniqueness that is in all the different states. I often tell students when I teach the intro class, one of the very first questions I ask them is, how many of you have been to all 50 individual states? And of course, there's no hands that go up, which is always – it's never happened in my entire life of teaching. And that's 30 years. Some are – you know, it's funny. Some students have been to about 15 or 20, which is really good. And of course, then I'll follow that up with, you know, how many countries have you been to? And of course, that list gets small as well.
Sure.
And, you know, we talk about how we want to travel a lot. But the reality is the number of people that travel is actually a minority. You have to realize that in this country, only about a quarter of the population possesses a passport. Now, Iowa – you know, here we are. We're in the middle of the country, and a lot of people don't think of Iowa as being a pure destination. And in fact, the majority of the people who would come here would technically be the terminology we would use is VFR, visiting family and relatives. That's a great market because, again, that's the transient or individuals like you or myself who are going back home to visit families or perhaps family reunion up in Okoboji or, you know, maybe down at Honey Creek or something like that. So the state has a lot of the quote-unquote destination-type areas that people would associate with tourism and hospitality. We don't have any kind of major concentration of those that exist in certain markets here in the United States. But that's okay. A lot of people, they want some of the glitz and glamour, but then a lot of people say, no, I'd rather prefer a place that's perhaps maybe off the beaten path a little bit. And that's really what Iowa is. It's off the beaten path. It's not on everybody's top five list. But people who come here always walk away going, wow, I'm really, really blown away by what I found. I'm really surprised.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. That interview we just heard was from Lars Olson speaking with Bob Bosselman, president of the Board of Directors of the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. They were recapping the 2014 with a look at 2015 and what's in store. Also with us in the studio is Julie Kiefer and Allison Walters.
Julie is with Group Sales, and Allison Walters is with the Member and Visitor Services. And the last thing that Bob said was interesting about the off-the-beaten-track. I actually have two friends coming from Switzerland next week, and they are coming because they want to see Iowa instead of New York or Los Angeles.
Yeah.
So, Allison, before we go, let's talk about the grants that were given out, the Community Grant Program.
Mm-hmm.
And you announced the 27 events and projects that will be funded or received matching funding from the Bureau this year. And some of them are projects that we know and kind of are used to in town, which are kind of flagship events like the Octagon Arts Center Art Festival, Maximum Ames Music Festival, the Iowa State Games. But there was a few that I didn't recognize, and I wanted to ask you about those.
Sure.
There's something here called the Skunk River Horse Driving Trail.
Yes, this is a new organization. They have been, it's new to the Convention Visitors Bureau. They've been working to bring this event to the area. It's carriage driving, horse-drawn carriage riding. And so they'll be hosting an event in, I believe it's in June this summer. And
is
they'll
this,
bring people from throughout the Midwest that have the...
Is this competitive?
Yes,
or?
Yeah. And it's the first time that they will have done it in the area. So very excited to have them involved with the Bureau.
And where will they be?
Don't know. For
somewhere
sure.
where there's room.
Right. Exactly.
And a lot of horses.
You know, it's interesting too. Sometimes these groups, they have an idea and they are still working a lot on a lot of the details.
Uh-huh.
And so by getting this extra funding from the Bureau, they're able to really make this a reality. And I think this is one of those groups. It's
very
a new
nice.
Event, and it'll be a nice addition to the community.
And they're a local group?
Yes.
Okay, well, we'll have to have them come in and talk
about
it.
Yeah, definitely.
And movie night in Campustown, where is that held?
The Campustown Action Association was all set to do this last summer, and then there was some bad weather. So they ended up doing it in the sunroom of the Memorial Union. But their idea is to show a movie outside on Welch Avenue on a beautiful summer evening, and a very family-friendly event. I think they did the Lego movie last summer. Mm-hmm. So they'll be, I think, on the building that there's a parking lot there between two buildings just off of Welch Avenue. Mm-hmm. So,
cool. And Firefly Country Nights. Sounds very romantic.
This is a country concert that the Main Street Cultural District did for the first time last summer.
Right. Very successful.
Very successful. And this year they applied for some funding to help with some of those logistics and some more promotion. So we're excited to make that a bigger event for the Main Street Cultural District.
I also noticed that Story City Chamber of Commerce got money for Scandinavian Days.
Yes.
So you consider Story City part of your jurisdiction?
Yes. We support all of Story County. We work closely with Boone. And I think this is one of the few times that an organization outside of Ames has been funded. But it is a milestone event. I don't remember if
it's
25th anniversary or something like that. So that was part of the reasoning behind funding that. So very excited because that adds to the quality of life for the community as well as providing events for our visitors to attend and things to promote to the visitors.
Okay. Well, thank you. I'm speaking with Julie Kiefer and Allison Walters and from the Convention and Visitors Bureau. And anything else we need to say before we wrap up?
You know, we just like to mention that last year visitors to our community spent over $99 million in direct spending within the Ames community. So it's a huge economic driver for our community, and I don't know that people realize that all the time.
And it's also a test to the work that you're doing.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for coming in, and please come in again.
Thank you.
Let's keep talking.
It's great being here.
Thank you. Thanks for coming, Julie.
If you've just tuned in,
You are listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am one of your hosts today, Cynthia McClure, and we were just listening
to Papa Loves Mambo.
Yeah, actually, I thought that was a good choice.
Loris is here.
Loris
is here as a guest reporter here to tell us about the acid hearing for Local Human Services. Loris, first off, could you explain what the acid hearings are?
Sure. The acid hearings are one of the final steps in a unique 4-month review process, and it was designed by the county's 5 major funders to support as many as programs as possible without duplicating any of them. It's officially called the Analysis of Social Services Evaluation Team, which is why everyone calls it ASSET instead, okay? And it's made up of volunteers from the funders. Before the hearings, the volunteers go out, they meet with the boards of directors of these agencies, they look at the financials, they review the programs, and then the hearings are kind of the last chance for these agencies to do their little pitch. And of course, these hearings were last week, over two nights here in Ames.
And you attended them to report back to us about what's happening. It's a really important set of hearings because it really does plan out a map for where we're going in the following year in terms of human services, correct?
It does. And this is where, if you want to keep track of what the trends are in human services in our county, if you want to know what's coming up, this is the time to listen to it. The asset hearings are also where the stories of our neighbors meet the numbers written in the accounting ledgers.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about what happened.
Sure. I'd like to start with the food pantries.
Okay.
Story County has close to a dozen food pantries. Most of them are completely funded by private donations. But two of the busiest, one operated by Mid-Iowa Community Action, and the other one, which is operated by the Salvation Army, do get money from the asset funders. Mike has asked for $24,000 to supplement $58,000 they raised just for the food pantry here. And the Salvation Army is asking for $12,000 to supplement the $42,000 for the food pantries here. I have a clip now from Salvation Army local director Carrie McPartland, and she kind of gave a heads up to the asset board that the demand seems to be rising.
Salvation Army provides food pantry that is funded by asset. We've had a really busy year, but I've taken 6 months stats, and at this point, since July 1st, we've had 734 families through. I can tell you that's a significant jump. That's about 1,988 people that we've served, and so I really feel like where we looked to for next year on the budget is probably close. We're about halfway there already, and I looked at potentially doubling the numbers. So one of the interesting statistics that I looked up is that we've had 105 brand new families to us since July. That may not seem like a big deal, but in the food pantry world, it is. A lot of times you have repeaters, people who come back every month because that's just they're so low income that they have to rely on food pantries around the county to get through the month. But we're seeing people that we've never seen before. And so I don't know what to attribute that to. I haven't asked, but it's something that I found very interesting.
Now, Micah said their client numbers were holding steady, but it is a trend that we need to watch. There are several common themes that run through the agency updates and funding requests, and one of them is the ongoing need for transportation options throughout Story County. The Retired Senior Volunteers Program operates a service that matches older drivers with older riders. The agency, RSVP, gets about $6,600 a year from ASSET to help cover the cost of gasoline and car maintenance for the volunteer drivers. Kaylin Peterson, the director of RSVP, described the demand and the rider satisfaction with their volunteer driver program.
Transportation, if you remember last year, we had to stop charging a rate for the trips that we provide with our transportation program. We have a team of volunteers that provide rides to individuals that need to get to and from. The priority is really medical appointments. Now it's donation, suggested donation. So to date, I will tell you that really has not affected our income. very much at all. In fact, if anything, especially early on, a lot of our clients decided that they wanted to give extra just because they wanted to make sure that the program was sustained and they didn't want it to go away. So that kind of spoke to how badly the program is needed. The majority of our clients are not low income or below poverty level. They're frail elderly or disabled, older adults who want to keep living in their homes, and they depend on the service to get them to and from, mostly medical appointments. I would say probably 90% or maybe more are medical. A few to grocery store, errands, a few hair appointments, because that can be an essential service if you're 85 and you need to get there.
You know, most of these agencies wouldn't be able to function without the volunteers, which is why some of the money from the asset funders goes to two agencies whose primary responsibilities are to recruit volunteers for other agencies. We mentioned RSVP already. The Volunteer Center of Story County is the other. Ann Owens, the Volunteer Center Executive Director, introduced a new initiative focused on developing former formal employer volunteer programs.
Going forward, we have a couple new initiatives that we're very excited about. One is the Corporate Volunteer Program, helping area employers develop and support employee volunteer efforts, helping them with their social responsibility as corporate citizens in the community. Employee volunteer programs are seen as another employee benefit to offer.
And, of course, most agencies also recruit independently. Ben Barnhart of the American Red Cross talked about using short-term, somewhat easy community service projects to recruit long-term skilled volunteers who are capable of responding to a major disaster like an apartment complex fire, a flooded neighborhood, or an entire town leveled by a tornado.
We've asked for a grant of $30,000 to support building some volunteer infrastructure so that we can deliver our disaster relief services and do more around our service to the armed forces programming. We're constantly trying to recruit but not over-recruit the number of volunteers. We want to keep them busy. We don't want them to sit around and get frustrated, say bad things, and then leave our organization. So what we do is we recruit and train with a lot of intention. And we've been doing that a lot better, I think, over at least the last 12 months. I can cite three volunteers that we picked up just as a result of the project. One is a student. He's a member of a fraternity, and he reached out to us because they wanted to become involved in a service delivery project. So, of course, the project happened last fall, and we installed a few hundred smoke detectors in the city of Nevada.
30 nonprofit agencies applied for funding this year. Their requests total over $4.5 million, with many of the requests asking for at least 10% more than last year. Unfortunately, the funders are only projecting about 5% more in what they will be giving. For example, the Foster Grandparent Program run by Visiting Nurses of Iowa is one of the smallest programs in participant numbers that Story County's asset group funds. The agency currently has 8 low-income senior citizens working on reading, language, social skills, and math with students in AIM schools. The foster grandparents are paid a salary plus reimbursed for expenses. Asset paid about $12,000 for that program last year. Visiting Nurses is asking for double. But the relationships formed between the kids and the foster grandparents are worth much more than that. And that we heard that in a note that Program Director Anna Vaughn read to the Asset Board.
One of my story grandmas wrote a letter. Just to preface this, she was in the program before we got the sponsorship, and she was in Boone, but now she is in Story County. So I'm still friends with my teachers that I work with in Boone. We get together and have a Coke at McDonald's and talk about things. I worked with her for 16 years. I see kids that I worked with many years ago. They have kids now that I see. I have many good memories about all the years that I worked with Foster Grandparent Program, how the schools have changed, how the subject and teaching has changed over the years. I would not have the good memories that I have or the fun that I had if it wasn't for the Foster Grandparent Program. I'm real glad that I joined the program. The reason I keep coming back to the Foster Grandparent Program is the kids and the teachers that I work with.
This year's hearings also marked a milestone for an agency executive director, actually an agency founder, who was also instrumental in getting voters to approve the local option sales tax that provides the money Ames uses for its asset funding. George Belitsos is the powerhouse between youth and shelter services, and he's retiring at the end of June.
Oh, wow.
I end my official report with George expressing his gratitude and the asset board volunteers returning the affection.
This is my last presentation as CEO of YSS because I'll be retiring in 2015. By July 1, there'll be a new CEO at YSS. I will stay on for another 6 months part-time, providing support and orientation and training for the new CEO. So by the end of 2015, I will be departing YSS altogether. And so this time next year, there'll be a new CEO in this position. I want you to know that I'm very grateful for all the support that asset has given YSS. Yeah, you have your finger on it. You're going to have to get used to getting along without me. So let's yep. All the things I'm most proud of over those years. Just about the time asset started, we lost revenue sharing. And that's when we used to all go to City, County, United Way and make our presentations to the individual funders. And a group of us, I think it was Lynette Hathorn, she was the founder of CCJ, and then I think it was Dean Hunsaker and myself got together and we said, let's go for this local option sales tax funding. And that passed. And that is the source of a lot of the funding we get through asset from the city to this day. And so I'm really proud of that and that we did that very early in this community and been the source of a lot of funding. Chamber of Commerce and those of us in human services think it's something we should all be proud of, but I'm really proud that I had a role in that. Thank you for all these years of support, and it's been a privilege to serve as the CEO of YSS, and it's going to be hard to bid farewell, but I will stay on in the community. My husband and I, my husband's going half-time. I'm retiring altogether, and then I will be doing a lot of volunteer work just to, like those of you around this table, I owe this community a great deal. It's given me every opportunity I could have ever dreamt of to be of service to kids, and now it's my turn to pay back. So I'll be doing a lot of volunteer work just like you. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thanks.
And he wow. clearly has made a difference.
Yeah, and he says it's his turn to give back as if he hasn't already been giving.
Forever, I think, right? I think YSS celebrated their 30th anniversary or 35th.
Yeah.
Sorry, George, I don't
wow.
remember.
Thank you, George, for your service.
I'd like to end with just kind of an update here. We talked about transportation at the beginning of this segment, and I'd like to let people know that Ames and Story County are holding a public input session tomorrow morning on recommendations for improving services from mm-hmm. the public transport providers in the county. And it includes another one of the agencies that participate and are partially funded by ASSET, which is called the Heart of Iowa Transit Agency. We know it as HERTA, one mm-hmm. of those acronyms again.
Yeah.
The proposed plan is called the Draft Demand Response Public Transit Action Plan for Story County, and you can find it on the City of Ames website, cityofames.org. There's a link on the homepage. The input session was postponed from January 5th because we had a little bit of bad weather
yeah.
that day.
yeah.
The public input session will be from 8:30 to 10:30 a.m. tomorrow, Saturday, January 17th, in the City Council Chambers at Ames City Hall, 515 Clark Avenue. So, thank you.
Thank you for that. Loris Olson has been here with us to fill in and give us some insight
into the unique ways human services programs are funded in Story County. Thank you for all your hard work and for making this presentation.
Yeah, thank you, Laura. That
this
was
great.
Was great.
Yeah.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We are talking about our community. Loris Olson has been speaking about resourcing the support services for those who live here. And before that, we heard from the Convention and Visitors Bureau, who focus on making our area attractive as a destination. In the last part of this hour, we're going to talk about an activity that has been deeply embedded in our community for many years. I grew up with it.
We're going to speak with the Story County 4-H Youth Coordinator, Mary Wilkinson, and her new intern, 4-H intern, Sarah Tweeten. And I was interested in hearing about this because I really like 4-H, and these are great people, and I've worked with them before on stories, you know. And I just want to, you know, give you guys some airtime to talk about 4-H. So what do you want to share with the people of Story County about this program?
Thank you for the opportunity. Well, just a little bit overview about the 4-H program. It is part of Iowa State University Extension and Outreach, so it is affiliated and comes through campus. 4-H is in every county, and we're excited to share that we have over 600 youth in Story County that are active participants in the Story County 4-H program. The 4-H mission is to empower youth to reach their full potential through youth-adult partnerships and research-based experiences. I'm one person in the office. Sarah is one person in the office. So the 4-H program relies heavily on our 4-H trained volunteers.
Do these 4-H trained volunteers, do they tend to be former 4-H participants?
Some are. As we continue on with 4-H, I feel like I'm getting more phone calls from families with the background of never participating.
So these are new members. They're not from a farm background that have had three generations of showing cattle at the fair or anything like that.
Exactly. I think what they're hearing the message about 4-H is learning life skills and the opportunity to explore your interest.
So what of these life skills do they offer urban youth? I think a 4-H is primarily farm kind of hands-on classes. So what does 4-H offer urban youth?
4-H offers urban youth a wide variety. An example that I'm going to share has more to do with not livestock, not having to live in the country, but very much so living in town and exploring your interest. The first organization, so first Lego League.
Oh, yeah, I see that at the state fair.
That's amazing. Really grown. And 4-H has welcomed that and encompassed that.
What is it?
First is the organization that has First Lego League at four different levels. There's a junior level, so kindergarten, third grade, general First Lego League, which is fourth grade through eighth grade. And then there's two high school versions, First Tech Challenge and First Robotics Challenge. And at each level, they are exploring a theme. So they are given a topic that has concerns that they have to find a solution to. They are also learning about Legos, learning about maneuvering, making something that has robotics connected to the Legos to complete tasks if they're doing the competition season.
Can you give us an example, maybe a little story behind that, that frames it for our listeners so that they understand what the Lego League does for youth?
Sure. I would say our first robotics challenge team and our first tech team have both been very active. So they really come together as a group. They build friendships in that. They're developing those skills in STEM.
So these robotics challenges, they take Legos.
Yes.
They build like a car, and then they go on an obstacle course, and they try to program the car to maneuver through these obstacles. So these are really actually very technical skills that these young people are learning.
Yes.
So they
do programming, they do construction, engineering,
exactly.
And they're young people working together to make this happen. So there must be a lot of frustration if it doesn't work, if they program it to go right and it goes left or go forward and it goes back or it doesn't move at all. So there's some really challenging aspects to the Lego League.
Absolutely. And sometimes you'll hear the phrase failing forward. And it's that idea that you learn from those processes and you learn from what might be a mistake. Actually, you take that learning and you find the success in it. So they're doing all of those things.
So this is, one can think about this as like if they were sending a probe out to Mars, and what the Mars mission has to do is they have to send this out and meet the challenges of just problem solving. Through,
absolutely.
And these are young kids. And you said, how young are some of these kids that are doing these problem solving?
Our current participants are in high school. However, we're exploring the option. We're learning the information on how to get started with a junior First Lego League with the intent that perhaps maybe as early as next month, we could actually start working with some kindergarten through third grade in this aspect as well.
So where do these kids take this kind of skill set? Where do they go with this?
I think a lot of them are exploring the engineering option. One of the teams actually meets on the campus and has ISU mentors as well. So they're getting familiar with Iowa State. They're getting familiar with and getting to hear from the students that are at Iowa State currently and start to see that process too and continue on down that journey.
So this is a great skill builder for kids that are interested in going on to university.
Absolutely.
Nice.
Yep.
Let's hear from Sarah Tweeten, who is the intern. So have you ever done the Lego League or been involved with that?
I have not, but I guess that was just kind of getting started when I was going through the 4-H program and just around the time of my graduation. But if nothing else, it speaks volumes for the 4-H program itself that, you know, it's an active and growing program and it's keeping up with the changes. So, you know, it's not just the cows and cookies that everyone thinks of. It's a lot more than that. So.
Yeah. What did you do when you were in 4-H? That you remember?
Well, I started 4-H in fourth grade, and I was your typical average, really shy, quiet little fourth grader. But I distinctly remember being just irate with my mother when I realized that she had signed me up for the 4-H style show. It absolutely terrified me that I would be in front of a crowd of roughly 100 people modeling my outfit that I had gotten for the fair. But I did it, and I remember thinking, oh, that wasn't that bad. So just from there, and after going to an awards program and receiving the I Dare You Award and asking me to step up and get involved, it just really motivated me to take on more leadership levels within the club and within the state. I actually ended up serving on the state 4-H council for 2 years and planning the 4-H youth conference in Ames, where we get together around 1,000 delegates and have workshops and keynote speakers. So
this is a confidence builder then for young people who are kind of in that awkward stage maybe in their life.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's helped me, you know, throughout high school and then into the professional world as well. I'm holding an internship here at Story County. I've had one in Worth County, my home county. Just the whole, I guess it gives you real-life application and puts you a little bit of ahead of the curve, I would say.
Well, thank you, ladies. Thank you. Is there anything else you want to share with us?
Anybody that has questions about the program certainly could feel free to give us a call or check out the website.
What's the website?
The website is www.extension.iastate.edu/story.
Okay. Thank you, ladies. And they can check out 4-H programming on that. And you offer a wide range of programming, and they can call you and find more details.
Absolutely. We'd be glad to visit.
I'm so glad you guys came in.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Us.
And we'll post a link to your website on our website as well on a homepage in case people need have trouble remembering it.
And also, this website serves all of Iowa, the ISU Extension website. So if there's another county, not just Story County, right, you can access 4-H programs statewide.
Yes.
So this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and KHOI reporter Belinda Merritt is here with us. Belinda, here you are. Do you have our end-of-the-week music and entertainment rundown?
Yes, I do. On Friday, January 16th, the bands Dr. Murdoch and Atlas will be at DG's Tap House, 125 Main Street. Kurt Behringer will be at Mother's Pub, 2900 West Street. Brennan Sensations will be at Crossroads Tavern, 1709 Giddings, Kelly, at 9 o'clock p.m. The Pines will be at the Maintenance Shop, ISU Memorial Union, at 9 o'clock p.m. on Saturday, January 17th, Rebirth Art and Music Collaboration Performance Folk Night will be at Iowa Music Store, 300 Main Street. Last in Line will be at The Bar, 823 Wheeler Street at 9 o'clock p.m. Bob Pace will be at Mother's Pub, 2900 West Street. Trick Kitty will be at the Southside Lounge in Boone from 8 o'clock p.m. until 1 o'clock a.m. On Sunday, January 18th, Rebirth Art and Music Collaboration Performance Rock Show will be at DG's Tap House, 125 Main Street. The bands Muff Helmet and Obsidian's Dream will be at DG's Tap House, 125 Main.
Thank you, Belinda. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we've been here today with Julie Kiefer and Allison Walters from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau, and also Bob Bosselman, who was president of the Board of the Visitors and Convention Bureaus. He was also here with a recap of 2014 and a preview of 2015. Loris Olson gave a report today on the asset management hearing, and updated us on what kind of funding we're looking forward to for 2015. And also, we were fortunate to get a recording of George Belitzos speaking about the end of his term of service here with YSS. Also, Mary Wilkinson, the 4-H youth coordinator from Story County, and Sarah Tweeten, who's an intern from Iowa State, was here with us today to talk about 4-H, and Belinda Merritt, as usual, gave us the rundown on music and live entertainment for the weekend.
Okay, and
full show.
Full show.
It's great to have everybody here.
Ursula, do you want to give a quick little update about what the programming is going to be for?
Yeah, we have
Martin Luther King Day.
We have a really exciting announcement on Monday. Martin Luther King Day, KHOI will be celebrating by airing a previously unknown recording of the speech by Martin Luther King Jr. It was just discovered last December by Pacifica Radio, and we will be airing it on at 2 p.m. on Monday and at 10 p.m. on Monday, and most of the speech will also be heard on Democracy Now! At 6 p.m. The speech was a speech that King gave in London in 1964, and it was discovered in December by the Pacifica Radio Archives as they were looking through their unopened boxes in actually looking for something else, for a different project, when they came across a box that said Martin Luther King, London, 1964. And they listened to it and had it verified. And, in fact, this is a speech that has never been recorded, or a recording has never been found before. It is also the only really record of his public position on apartheid, because he was asked to speak to apartheid. He speaks for an hour to an overflowing audience. He's quite funny. He makes jokes, he cracks the audience up, but he speaks on a huge variety of topics besides South Africa, including his, approach to philosophy, the history of slavery, and the future of world peace. So it's quite a magnificent speech, and we're very proud to be one of the first stations in the country to air it, along with other Pacifica affiliates. And again, that'll be on Monday, 2 p.m., 10 p.m., and at 6 o'clock during Democracy Now! This will be the first time ever this recording will be revealed anywhere.
Yeah, so this is finding gold. It's like finding, a pre-constitutional thing. It's great.
History is a living process.
And thanks to Pacifica Radio Network, this archive actually exists, because without it, it would have been lost.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join our team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878. Contact us through our website at khoifm.org. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends and check us out on Facebook. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from the CD The Ballad of Kate Shelley. If you can also listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. Your participation as an audience and your generous donations help make KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.